Don't miss a second of the action. Subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast to get it every weekday morning in your podcast feed from 10 a.m. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, your most supported our frontline workers this Movember.
Yeah, that is Jack McCaffrey. Remember, you can get that Bernard Brogan podcast. Just get on to the OTB Sports app, search for GEA podcast, subscribe, and you will get all our GEA content, including all our coverage around the All-Ireland Hurling and Football Finals. And we're going to talk about the Hurling Final right now because Tommy Welch is on the line. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning, Nathan.
Did you ever get imposter syndrome? When you went into training with DJ, did you think, geez, I don't belong here?
Well, I suppose, funny enough, you probably would, like, at times, especially in the early parts of your career, when you're in marking the likes of Charlie Carter, DJ Carey, Brian McAvoy, Shefflin himself, like, sometimes you do feel maybe you shouldn't be there, but you quickly get over that and try and win the next ball, you know, but
yeah.
I'd say every county player can relate to feeling like Jack did at times, I suppose, Nathan, you know, maybe the buzz is gone and not enjoying it anymore, but I think over the course of your career or over the year, maybe you enjoyed a lot more than those moments. So obviously he was, you know, strong enough probably to walk away towards, I'd say a lot of people wouldn't be able to, because although there's times that they don't want to be there, they would much rather the highs than those few lows, you know.
It's particularly incredible when he's thinking like that after the drone game last year, where he has one of the great performances in an All-Ireland final. He scores 1-3. Rather than thinking, God, another chance to go out and show myself in front of 80,000 people, he almost got the sense he'd rather be anywhere else. It strikes that he's a pretty unique individual.
Yeah, but I tell you, I could relate to that with the 2012 All-Ireland, the year we played Galway.
Mm.
So what happens is, with the inter-county, it's all-consuming for so long. So you go back in, let's say, January, probably. For him, it's probably just all year round, maybe November, December, I'm not sure. Even though the Dubs are good enough to take their time off during the winter, I have noticed that. So it was probably from January on. So you're talking about 9 months. Then at the end of September, so I remember playing the All-Ireland against Galway, and now it was different in that we had it won. I'm not sure what the story is in that final. Were they winning by a point? But in our final, we were winning by a point. So when it was a draw, like, it was nearly as bad as losing. And you're like, oh no, we have to go 3 more weeks. I have to train, go back. You know, we thought this was all over, win or lose. But you have to go back training for 3 weeks. And, you know, I can understand that. I'd say the Kenny lads, probably maybe the Galway lads from 2012, they might be able to relate to that. But I suppose Brian Cody just brought us into a meeting and quickly got us out of that mindset, you know. And it was interesting what he said to us, like, and I've said it on this show a few times, like, he said to us, right, lads, because we were all down in the dumps, and it was in a room in the City West, and he just said to us, right, lads, since you were 4 or 5 years of age, you've dreamed in playing in All-Irelands, you know, in front of 80,000 people, for Kilkenny, on the biggest day of all. You're going to get that chance in 3 weeks' time. He was saying you'd wait 3 months, 3 years, 30 years for that one chance that most people don't get. So I suppose we were lucky in that about, 2 hours after the final whistle went, he brought us back from feeling sorry for ourselves into, you know, we're the luckiest lads in the world. So, you know, I'd say lads can relate. A drawn match is a funny match, Nate. And, you know, you are built up for weeks and months for this final moment. And then it's not really over. So you can relate to it, yeah?
Tommy here. What's the crack?
Well, Tommy.
Yeah, the Dubs were behind that day. Do you remember they had a man sent off and they kind of rescued the drive for five? And I know what you're saying there about the deflation of a draw. But I think if from listening to the McCaffrey interview as a whole, I think something went wrong in the summer, or he lost a lot of it in the summer. And I think he's pinpointing that game. I'm not sure it was specifically the draw itself, if you know what I mean. I think it was just that realisation when he looks back in it that, Jesus, like, he just didn't want to play. He just wanted to be there, you know? And I'm not sure if that's typical to all drawn finals, or I'm not sure if all the Dubs felt that. Like, I think it was a very natural thing for you to feel in 2012 and for Cody to pull these into a room and say, lads, you've 3 weeks now. But I'm not sure if it was something that McCaffrey could fix, which is obviously why he stepped away.
Yeah, and, you know, I was trying to think about, because, you know, I was watching that kind of story there all day yesterday as it was unfolding. And, you know, obviously a really interesting story because he is an interesting character. So, like, I suppose the other I'm not sure what the comment on this is now, but regards his occupation, his job. So if you've noticed the last couple of years, a lot of people, a lot of players, they're nearly fitting their jobs and their careers around their inter-county game. So first and foremost, they're focused on the inter-county game, and kind of everything else for that 10 or 12 years fits in right just a little bit under. Now, you would notice most people that are successful in sport are also successful in the working world. But, you know, he's in such a massive job in the medical industry. And, you know, judging by him there, he seems to absolutely love it. So if he's after having, you know, I don't know, a 12-hour shift or maybe patients there that, you know, might have had a tough day with patients and that, you know, seeing things that he mightn't have wanted to see, then you have to go training after it. Suddenly you're into a different game then, Tommy, you know, that when you are out in the field and things are not going well, you know, as regards, you know, you mightn't be in love with it the way you should be. Suddenly then you see, well, listen, I have a massive career outside of this, that, you know, there's a lot of pressure on both sides of it. So, listen, I can't understand then.
Did you ever think about stepping back?
Hey, I'm 37 years of age and I still don't feel like stepping back. You know, I'm absolutely depressed. I've set an ambition for the last while. I want to hurl me 40th year. And, you know, maybe when I get to there, it could be 41 or 42.
Come on, Tommy.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Tommy, this weekend is obviously going to be a most unusual hurling final. And Jack McCaffrey was talking there about the build-up and being in the tunnel before the game and all of that. How different an experience do you think it's going to be, particularly in those moments before throw-in and when nerves are really kicking in for players? The fact that there's no noise around the stadium, there's going to be this slightly surreal atmosphere. You've been in Crow Park already this summer and know what it's like. When you think back to the dozens of times you've been there in Crow Park on big occasions, do the crowd and the occasion, does that feed into the sense of nerves? So do you think it'll be a different build-up for the players?
Oh, absolutely, Nathan, 100%. I was reading an interview with Tom Morrissey during the week, and I think he just commented that it's a lot more relaxed. You'll be a lot more relaxed going out into the field. So I know from playing club hurling this year without the crowds. So the match itself, you are trying your absolute damnest. It's tough. It's intense. It's everything. But the build up isn't. It's a lot more relaxed. And he mentioned much the same as the way I was feeling, that in the dressing room you're not too bad, going out in the field you're not too bad, you're just getting ready for a match as if you're back in your own club. So like if you go back to the times we played in All Ireland, like I kind of, you could relate it to maybe the lockdowns. Like it's a tough day, the morn of a match, like you're just in you're thinking about this, you've built this up for the last, you know, few years, could be 20, 30 years or 12 months, depends on the situation. And, you know, you can't be really laughing and joking. So I always felt when you got to the hotel, so you're excited in the morning, you go up on the bus, then you get off and you get into the hotel. But hotel means lockdown. That means the joking, the laughing, the crack is gone. You better get to your seat, eat your lunch, kind of look focused. You know, you're very nervous. You're probably not even able to laugh and joke at this stage. You're not able to drink your soup. You're kind of taking a bite here and there out of your sandwich. Then you get the call to go get onto the bus. So now you're starting to see the light, you know, you're starting to come out of the lockdowns, Nathan, you know. And then you get to Crow Park. And this is where it all starts getting enjoyable for me again. The dressing room, you're still there. You still can't wait for 3:30 to come. But I always felt the dressing room, I never liked it. Try to be busy in the dressing room. We got in there probably about an hour beforehand, maybe a little bit, an hour and 10 minutes. I was praying that there'd be a minor final on going on, that wasn't half time in the minor. Get out straight away, stay busy. The last thing I wanted at that stage of an All-Ireland final was to be left with your own thoughts. So I just tried to stay busy doing little things, doing nothing really, and read a little bit of the programme. Back in then, and you got to play in the warm-up area. In the warm-up area then, I spent the majority of my time in there running, jostling the walls, press-ups, doing that, and you could do that. Meant you weren't sitting down thinking about the game. Other lads were different. Likes of, we'll say, JJ would be more relaxed. Richie Power would be more relaxed. You know, different personalities everywhere. But then, as you said, this is where we come to the moment of the crowd. So you're inside in the warm-up area, which is a big green area just underneath the Hogan stand. So once you open that door, you can hear the crowd straight away. So we always felt that it was half three you to be ready for. Brian Cody would have always, I suppose, mentioned to us, don't let anything, I suppose, distract you. So if you break your hurl, if you're not feeling great, if, you know, the grass is too long, whatever happens, it doesn't matter. Half three is when you need to be ready. So once that door opened, I used to be always first or second out, you know, behind the captain. Not true choice or anything. I just wanted to get out of that dressing room because this is where the enjoyment came back. And once we got out there, I don't know if you come from a farming background up in Mayo, Nathan, but we were like cattle coming out of a slat shed, jumping in ice.
I'm not, but I know what you
that
mean.
That was, you know. So that was the time that we could, you know, get on with it again. And it was great. Like the crowd, you know, the noise. You know, players will tell you that they don't hear it. You don't really hear anything going on, but you do hear that buzz. Like you can feel the goose pimples on your chest, on your back.
You must feel it, Tommy, at the end of the parade, because I think it's like it's one of the best moments of the Irish sporting year, football final or hurling final, when the teams are going down towards the hill and the noise and just the crescendo of this sort of Mexican wave of noise building and building. As a player, when you're getting there, is it literally the hairs are up in the back of your neck?
Oh, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. Like, yes, before you do it for the first time, you always think this is, you know, when you're looking at the players, they look kind of so focused. They look maybe nervous and that. And you're like, geez, I'd hate to be there kind of a thing. Because the pressure that must be on them must be unbelievable. But that is gone at that stage. When you get into that parade, that's probably the most enjoyable part of the pre-match. Because, I don't know, it's hard to explain. You're walking around. The first few years, you're told to look at the ground. So you're kind of looking down, wondering who's out in the stand. And I better look focused here in case Brian is looking at me. But, I made that mistake my first year. And then when we got to the hour on, I looked up and I...
What? Oh, sorry. Okay, go on.
And then I looked up after looking at the ground for you know, the whole All-Ireland Final Parade. Looked up and I said, oh, my God, there's some crowd here. The nerves hit you then. But, the parade is magic. It's absolute magic. In my later years, what I tried to do was look around at the crowd, not look for people, but just to build myself up that this is the way it is, because there's no point in going into your number five position and then getting a fright that you look up, there's 87,000 people at the game. So I tried to build in that into the warm-up and really, you know, focus on half three, but let's get used to this crowd. Let's get used to these surroundings. And then the breakaway, you run into your position and the hour on the vein and, I used to get a crazy habit where I used to have to scratch the middle of my hand. And I don't know what it was. It used to happen. Never happens to me in life, except for I'm in the All-Ireland final. Well, in the hour on the vein for an All-Ireland final or a big game. But and then you get into your position then. And, you know, your man usually hits you a few digs and you don't react. And on you go.
Yeah, it's a shame for these players that they won't get to experience all of that. But I guess the medal at the end of it looks the exact same for whoever comes out victorious on Sunday. Let's talk about the match then, Tommy. Waterford against Limerick. Any amount of analysis on the matchups and listening to some brilliant analysis from Paddy Stapleton yesterday morning. A lot of it seems to be focusing around the two half-forward lines. What are you looking at in terms of the matchups that you're most looking forward to?
Yeah, well, if you mention the half-forward lines, you know, you have to mention, I suppose, Garrod Hegarty, Keane Lynch. Like Keen Lynch is kind of the by wonder of Limerick. He's the by wonder of Ireland at the moment. He's this real humble guy. You know, he goes to Mass of a Sunday. He says his prayers. He's really good. He doesn't. I think he's a non-drinker. He's really, you know, happy-go-lucky kind of a guy, and just dazzles with that stick. Like you see the last day against Galway. You know, he wasn't in the game a whole lot. Last 15, 20 minutes when the game was there to be won, he steps up and is absolutely brilliant. So whoever picks up Keane Lynch, whether he's centre forward or whether he's midfield, that will have a major part of the game, because when he's going well, I find Limerick are going well.
Who should pick him up?
I think Kevin Moran is going to pick up Garrod Hegarty. I think if he's centre forward, he'll roam around. I think Liam Cahill likes the traditional type of a back line where Tadhg Burke is left just in that centre-back role, where he's not a sweeper, but a centre-back was always given that licence that if he wanted a sweep, he could. if he wanted to step up on his man, he could do that. The kind of choice was his, really. So I would still like Watford to keep with that formation. So it's who picks up Keane Lynch. It's the midfielders. So maybe, I don't know, maybe Kieran Bennett or someone comes back out the field, and just every time Lynch comes deep, that he picks him up. And when he's up centre forward, then he's left to his marker, which will be Tadhg De Bórka. So that's what I think Tadhg De Bórka is. You know, on defensively, I think he's the best back in Ireland at the moment, without a shadow of a doubt. We all wondered, could he transfer from that sweeper role into your orthodox centre back? And I think he's even better at this job, because he's able to mark his man and do everything else that centre back. He's brilliant in the air, Nathan. And for a guy to, you know, centre back, full back, to catch balls out of the air, crowd or no crowd, it's inspirational. Mm. And it just gives a fierce lift to the team. So I would see Tadhg De Bórka centre back. But you asked me who pick up Keane Lynch, the half hour line midfield for Watford.
Tommy, in terms of the wing backs, the likes of Kyle Hayes and Callum Lyons, it's been mentioned how good they've been this year. What have you made of their role, I suppose, and the kind of attacking play that they're bringing to the 5 and 7 position?
Yeah, well, if we look at Callum Lyons, first of all, you see, it's going to suit... Well, look at the two guys, really. It's going to suit them. They're very comfortable attacking, Tommy. So they're not just going to sit back, maybe holding their wing-back position. And if you know, every half-forward in the country is told now, like probably started with Brian Duher back in that great Tyrone team of 0-3, 0-5, 0-8, where they were brilliant. They're nearly as important to the team going back defending as they were attacking. Well, every half-forward in hurling, if you go up along the lines, Owen Larkin has done it for the last few years. Now you have Garrod Hegarty and Tom Morrissey. But if they do that, that means the half-back, if he doesn't stay back there, he has the opportunity to attack. And that's where I think we've seen the joys of Kyle Hayes and Callum Lyons this summer, is that when their direct opponent has gone back helping out the defence, they're not just sitting there waiting for the ball to come back down. They're gone up. And when they get the ball, they do damage. You know, we've seen them scoring goals, scoring points, setting up goals and points. So I think the two guys, they will have a crucial bearing on the game.
The role of the half-backs, Tommy, has that changed dramatically? Listen, you just chip in with your scores here and there. And like we're talking about Trent Alexander-Arnold there as a full-back in football. There's an expectation now that he's almost more of an attacker than a defender. For half-backs now, is there less pressure to be a good defender and more to be an additional figure in the attack?
You have to be able to do both, really, Nathan. Like, you go back to, you know, it probably started changing when Cork maybe were doing their running game, and then, you know, it probably progressed to different game plans going, like, traditionally it was always the backs defended, the forwards scored. Like, even a back scoring wasn't even a great thing because he should be hitting the ball into the forwards. So it definitely has changed in the last few years that you have to be able to get up and help your half-forward line, because if you sit back, you see, when I was a wing-back playing the way I played, you wouldn't get away with it now, because back then, if you got the ball in the backs, you cleared the ball as fast as you can, get it up and out of defence as quick and as fast as you can and as long as you can. So as a wing-back, we say on our line, it used to be myself, Hoagie, Tenno, JJ maybe. So when the ball, a cornerback picked it up or a wing-back picked it up, the only thing that was in our heads was, where is this going to land? You weren't worried about really your man going for a chart, because if he got a chart, the manager probably would have torn strips out of him, you know, for going chart. So we were just wondering, where is this ball going to land? Is it going to be in the full back line or half back line? You position yourself then accordingly and try and catch it. Towards now, you have so many things going on. So if your man is even 5 or 10 yards off you, back then there wouldn't be a hope or it wouldn't be a prayer he'd get the ball. Nowadays, he will get it. So it's important that you can do both now, Nathan, but it's definitely important to say, not maybe that you can attack, but maybe that you can pick up your man when he does go deep, that right. You're not just hanging around.
Eamon Donoghue has an interesting article in the Irish Times today about Limerick and where they concede frees, and how in every game so far they've conceded more frees than the opposition, but that is not hurting them because of where they're giving away those frees. That, I guess, it is the sign of a very good team, maybe even a great team, that you know when to be cynical, that they know in the opposition side of the field it slows down the transition very quickly. Is that something that you've noticed from Limerick? Is that very much part of their game plan? Is tactical fouling essentially is what it is?
Yeah, no. I don't, because it's too easy to pick up yellow cards and red cards now, Nathan. to be tactically fouling. You know, you give away a couple of frees, or you're on a yellow card, then your manager can take you off because he's afraid you're going to get a red card. So I think whether the management, and no, I don't think John Kiely, Paul Kinnear, I don't think it's in their blood. I don't think it's in their mindsets. They're winners, but I think very fair winners. They want to win, but they want to win it doing it the right way. So I didn't see the article, but just trying to maybe look at it right now, off the cuff, I would say it's because of the sheer amount of tackling to do out in the middle third. So if you look at the Limerick, most teams now are playing with two men inside. So when you have two men inside, you're not really going to give away frees because you're probably chasing the ball. You know, say if Waterford have only two men inside on Limerick, well, most of the time the Limerick players will get the ball. And if they don't, the Waterford guys will be putting it over the bar that they'll have very little chance to foul them. If you look at, we'll say, when Stephen Bennett gets the ball, maybe he'll be after doing a run. So he'll get the ball out in space in front and there'll be a little chance to foul him. So I just think it's the sheer numbers that Limerick have out in the middle third. And they're brilliant. Their intensity, their tackling is excellent. And in hurling, there's so many things with high arms and hurls flying around everywhere. You can give away a free. So no, I don't think it's tactical fouling. I just think it's the sheer numbers that are out there and the intensity that they go about their business.
Tommy, in terms of the challenge that Waterford have as underdogs and the message that Liam Cahill and Mikey Beavins are going to be talking about this week or maybe over the last couple of weeks. A few weeks ago, you spoke about the importance of goals and you told a great story about your coach and Kieran's that would have always kind of passed that message on to players. Like, is that again, is it as simple as that this week? Is it, do Waterford need to chase goals? Do they need to be really aggressive in that sense early on?
They need to get goals. I wouldn't say chase goals because when you're trying to chase goals, they don't really happen. It's just when the chance comes, you go for it instead of tapping over and getting your easy point. Like you go back to Desi Hutchinson, like this is the Premier League footballer, the speed of this guy. So when he gets a chance, he can go past his man and score a goal. Like they could have been beaten by Clare a few weeks ago, Tommy. Before he scored two goals and set up a goal. And if you look at the three goals that he was involved in, like the one where he turned, he turned on his sixpence. That was speed. Like I remember we start as 15-year-olds. We said in Tullerome we'd start up a soccer team. You know, I've never played the game, probably never watched the game before. And we set up a team under 15 anyway. And no, we were talking, if you're missing it, of course, but we were talking, you know, we might get picked up by Arsenal or United. And what we heard from the scouts that time was that it was all about your first 5 yards, that it didn't matter how good you were at soccer. If you didn't have them first 5 yards, they wouldn't look at you. And now we got bet 18-0 and we gave it up after about four games. Evergreen Betis did a great team, actually, that team. Owen McCormack, Brian Barry. The trials over at Celtic, and I think Owen McCormack had trials with maybe West Ham. So listen, they were a good team.
Where did you play, Tommy?
I was right back. I was the very same as I was in the hurling, just hoofed the ball as far as I could when I got it. But like you know, I've actually, my auntie played international soccer for Ireland.
Right.
Ursula Mulcahy. But I didn't get any of them trades, you know. But my first cousin, Davy Mulcahy, played League of Ireland for I'd say 15 years. And Joseph played for, I think it's St. Michael's, is it, in Tiptown? They were after winning four or five cups. They were brilliant. And like I remember one Christmas, we were in their house, you know. This wasn't so long ago, maybe 5 or 10 years ago. But, you know, I'm messing and joking. We're down the street and we had a race. And it was embarrassing, the speed of these guys. And, you know, soccer players, like, just going back to my point, the soccer players, the top soccer players, it's all about speed. And you go back to Desi Hutchinson, like, when he gets the ball, he's gone. And there's no catch. Doesn't matter how good a hurler you are. He's gone and you can't catch him. And his vision then, you have to be able to play around with the ball. He set up that goal for Jack Fagan that nobody would have set up. I just thought, I was listening to Joe Malai's interview with some guy during the week there about Messi and Ronaldo. And they were just talking about how players couldn't learn from Messi because he just did things so naturally. But I think Desi Hutchinson, you could train a guy, you know, for 10 years and you wouldn't have been able to train him how to do that move in that split second, in that moment. So I think Desi Hutchinson, Tommy, come back to your point about goals. With him in there with Bennett, the chance they get goals, goals win matches. And them boys won't be forcing it. It's just if it's on, they'll go for it. And it has been coached by Liam Cahill.
just a really quick one on Desi Hutchinson there, Tommy. Like, we can see his speed rapidly on the pitch physically, but in terms of speed of thought, like, that's something that's jumped out about Desi Hutchinson on the pitch. Was there other players in the Kilkenny dressing room that just had sharper minds than anyone else? Is there anyone in particular that they were just quicker the way they thought about the game?
Yeah, all them forwards were. TJ Reid, like, if you go back, do you remember the goal? You might remember it now off the cuff, but he scored a goal in the All-Ireland semi-final against Waterford. I think it was 2015. So the ball came in high, and Waterford were playing the sweeper system that time. So the ball came in, right? It went behind him. He was able to turn, like Desi was, the way he turned against Clare that day. He turned really, really fast, right? Picked up the ball and put the ball into the back of the net down at the Hill 16 end. Well, I don't know, was I talking to him or somebody was talking to TJ afterwards? And what happened was, as the high ball was coming in, and you know TJ catches maybe 8 out of 10 balls anyway, but he knew that the man he was marking would try and play him as opposed to try and play the ball. He'd let the ball in behind either to the sweeper or to a goalie. So as he was jumping to catch the ball, he said he was turning. He knew that your man was going to play him, so he was kind of only half trying to catch the ball. And he turned nearly in midair, was turned as your man was probably hitting the ground, his opponent from Waterford, and had the ball up. And, like, that's genius. Like, there's nobody thinks of that. Another lad, JJ Delaney. I remember JJ was telling us about, was it Bonner or Dan Shanahan caught the ball on him in the square? I think it was Bonner. Caught the ball in the square. Big match, All-Ireland semi-final or All-Ireland final. And most people would foul a guy there. You know, you take the yellow or whatever and foul a guy. Don't let him score a goal anyway. And he knew that Bonner would try and go around him. So he just held him up. So he knew in that split second, imagine that, a lad catches the ball in the square, big moment, big game. He knew that the player he was marking would try and go around him as opposed to, you know, turn and twist and strike it into the top corner. So he had that genius of mind in that moment to be able to not hold off this guy and then try and hook or block him, you know. So, yeah.
It's not just the hurling final on this weekend. You've probably got more interest in the Camogie final on Saturday, Tommy. Grace going to be part of the Kilkenny side. Repeat against Galway. What's the plan for the weekend?
Yeah, so we'll be looking at that now Saturday evening.
Does the whole family gather around?
Yeah, well, listen, like my house and Mammy's house will, you know, because we're right beside each other here. So we'll all gather. That the rest of the lads are kind of living different places, so they'll be in their own houses. But yeah, no, we'll watch that match together. It'll be great. Like, it's a big final for us because after having so much heartbreak over the last 2 years, you know, and 3 years in a row after getting beaten, you know, the 116, and that was after heartbreak before that. So, you know, I think the girls have a new manager in there this year, Brian Dowland, and, you know, you can't beat the bit of freshness. So maybe that weight of expectation, that pressure isn't on them with the new management team. Henry Shefflin's brother Tommy is in there. Philly Larkin is in there. Pat O'Neill is in there. Huge characters in their own right. Who I always felt if you have big leaders, big characters in the management team, or maybe as the older parts of the team, it takes the pressure off the rest of the team. So I think with that management in this year, it'll take pressure off them. The players are going in as underdogs. Galway are the All-Ireland champions. Kilkenny didn't play well against Cork. Probably shouldn't have won that match. So we're very excited. We're very, you know, I suppose we're hoping, you know, that we can get across the line. But big day out for us.
Yeah. I won't ask you for a prediction on that. I'm sure I know which side you're going to go on. But there are still 3 days to go to the hurling final. You're going to be at Croke Park for us on Sunday. So, listen, this comes with a health warning. You're entitled to change your mind when you're on with Joe on Sunday afternoon. You can go the other way. Right now, Thursday morning, 3 days out. Is it Waterford or Limerick for Tommy Welsh?
It's Limerick. It's Limerick. But I get, you know, Waterford, they have a chance if they get goals. But I'm going with Limerick. Why, Nathan? I think they deserve that respect. They have done everything right for the last couple of years, last 3 years. They got caught in the semi-final last year, but only in the first 10-15 minutes. They still turned it around on that day with a huge comeback, and we're just unlucky not to come back in the end. It was probably just, you know, a decision in the end nearly cost them the draw game. I think they deserve the people's respect. They've done everything right. They're the All-Ireland champions of 2018. They're playing with a hunger that they've never won the All-Ireland before. They've lost the final 4 times from 73 to 2018, Nathan. Like, Limerick, like, everyone, the neutral will probably be shouting for Waterford. They haven't won it since 59. But Limerick have had a lot of heartbreak as well. Lost four times in 73, won in 18, had the heartbreak last year. So I'm expecting a massive match. And there's winners all over, Nathan. Like, the Limerick guys have won minor, 21 and senior. The Waterford guys have won minor, under 21, Fitzgibbons, Harty Cups. So there's winners all around. The two managers are winners. So it's going to be an epic battle, and I'm going to tip Limerick.
I'm pumped already, Tommy. I am pumped already. We look forward to hearing you on Sunday. There's a long way to go. You don't want to peak too early, I guess. That's the one thing we've learned here. Wait till you're just finishing up on the walk around Croke Park. That's when you really want to be at it.
That's it, Nathan.
Great stuff, Tommy. Well, enjoy Sunday. We'll talk to you then.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Good morning, it's just gone 9:05. You're watching OTB AM. Nathan and Tommy with you this morning. We're live in association with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, giving you the confidence to tackle the day ahead. Let's talk to John O'Brien, former All-Ireland winning hurler with Tipperary. Morning, John.
Hey, Nathan, how you well?
I'm okay. We'll get on to the final in a moment. But funny, we were chatting a lot about Jack McCaffrey this morning and, you know, the end of the career, and often it comes up as to what's next. You've had quite an interesting post-hurling career that has now moved into whiskey.
Yeah, Nathan, we just launched a premium blended Irish whiskey called Jim Mac, named after my uncle. We collaborated with a distillery, a Water Range distillery in Cork, to bring out the first expression. And we're really excited about it. The feedback so far has been amazing. So really looking forward to the journey that's ahead.
Was this a lifelong passion that you always wanted to have your own bottle of whiskey?
No, being honest with you, I suppose I've been looking at trends over the last number of years. Always been looking for something. I suppose after the hurling finished, you know, you put so much time and effort into it at such a high level that you want something that you can really get your teeth into. And I always wanted a product maybe that I could export. And I suppose my uncle Jim owns a bar in Timivera. He's been in the family since 1887. So, you know, the trends in spirits, brown spirits, have been growing at the expense of beer for years now, for maybe 20 years. You know, people are willing to spend more on high quality liquid when they do go out with less volume. So I was interested in that side of it, and we put together a good brand, and also then the liquid we made sure had to be good. You know, the brand stands out, but if the liquid isn't good, people aren't going to go back a second time. So a really, really positive feedback so far in the brand, and looking forward to what's ahead.
Well, neither myself or Tommy know what the liquid tastes like, because Ger Gilroy has pulled a fast one and said, yeah, John, come on, we'll chat about this. Send me up a couple of samples, and then doesn't even turn up for work. I'm not sure if the two are connected, but he tells me it's very good. So you have the Ger Gilroy seal of approval.
Yeah, well, that's it. Ger's given the seal of approval, but many people have, which is great, Nathan. We have people that have bought twice in the last 2 weeks. So we launched that 10 days ago, and the feedback has been brilliant.
You mentioned your uncle Jim. John, can you tell us a bit about him? You mentioned the Pope and Timivari. Was he a hurler?
Yeah, I suppose, look, we know Jim I know him all my life, obviously, but in the village itself, he was seen as more like the chieftain of the village. You know, unfortunately, Jim passed away in April last year, but he was part of this process from the start. He got to taste the whiskey and was part of that. But you know, at his funeral, I suppose, you know, everything we knew about Jim, everything we thought about Jim, we got that back in spades with the stories, and the priest at the funeral actually mentioned, you know, it was like the chieftain of the village had passed away, and he was that person. He was a solid guy. He was great fun, but he was ruthless as well on the hurling field. And the stories he had about hurling back in the day were brilliant to listen to. And yeah, he'd be sadly missed, but I think there's a nice tribute to him. The brand, the values that Jim stood for, we think resonate with people as well, because I think the tagline we have is every team, every town, every bar, everyone needs a Jim Mac. I think everyone knows a person like that in their family, in their community, that is that pillar of the community and is looked up to, but also is great fun. And, Jim was definitely that.
Yeah, and Jim Mac Whiskey will keep his name out there. Where can people buy it?
Sorry, Nathan?
Where can people buy the whiskey?
Oh, they can buy it online at Celtic Whiskey, and on Irish Malts. Actually, it was number one selling Irish whiskey last week on Celtic Whiskey and Irish Malts. So it was a brilliant start, and hope it continues.
All right, well, the very best of luck with it. Let's talk a little bit of hurling, because we're only 3 days away from the hurling final. When you think back to your days out on the pitch, 3 days away from the hurling final, are you very much in the mindset? Is every waking hour thinking about the game?
Not anymore, Nathan, thank God. It used to be. But I'm looking forward to this one because of the tip connection that's there at the moment. Mikey Beavens would have been a clubmate of mine for 10 years. I've came beside Mikey. And I remember when I retired in 2014, on the local radio, I was asked, who's the best player you ever played beside? And Mikey jumped into my mind. And I said, Mikey Beavens. And a lot of people outside of Tipperary probably wouldn't have known who Mikey Beavens was at the time. But, you know, we knew in Tommy Vare that Mikey was going to go on to great things once he went into coaching. He went on to partner up with Liam Cahill, who he played minor with. And they were both great, great fun, but very driven and very ruthless. And that shows what they've done so far in their careers. They've gone on to win a minor, two 120 and 121, and now they've pushed off in the water. Very ambitious, but ruthless. And I think when you see Mikey going down there, you know, with Liam, Liam's the first man to always praise Mikey and the relationship he has with the players. You know, it's very hard to get a coach that has that charisma, that empathy, that ruthlessness, but also has the attention to detail. And you can see that the Water players are really, really buying into what Mikey's asked them to do. And after 1 year to get to an All-Ireland final, I think is a huge endorsement of what the two boys have done down there.
John, as a coach, the name Paul Kinnerk has been associated with a couple of All-Ireland titles over the last couple of years. What exactly does Mikey bring in terms of a hurling brain? What's he bringing to Cahill and Waterford on Saturday?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Mikey was given captaincy in our club twice, which doesn't happen too often. And I think that shows the respect that every player had for Mikey when he spoke. And Mikey was an unbelievable trainer. Now, he was the worst man to stretch we ever came across. He pulled a hamstring walking down the street. So he didn't enjoy that part of it. But when he trained unbelievably hard. You'd love going out to puck around him. He had brilliant hands. But on the field, he was playing probably corner forward beside me. He used to head out the field and be the third midfielder nearly before that was ever a thing. He was very unselfish as a player. And you can see that in the Water players at the moment. And when he'd win a ball, he'd get through an amount of work. He'd solo through. He'd actually hand pass the ball over the head of the fullback. He'd take the fullback's shoulder, clean his face, week in, week out, while I get a chance to wheel off with the fist in the air for scoring the goal. So Mikey was just a really unselfish player. You can see that in the way Waterford are approaching the game, their work rate. But also, I think when Mikey took over, I just texted him to say, you know, I think a great decision, I said. There's an awful lot of pace down there. And I think in the modern game, you need pace. And the way Mikey played, he was very, very fast. And he was all about creating goals. And after 1 year, I think for the two boys to be able to incorporate that into Waters' game, I think has been fantastic in 1 year.
Cahill and Beavan's relationship, is that the good cop, bad cop, or are they very similarly aligned in their thoughts on the game and how to handle players?
Yeah, no, it could be actually to everyone looking in, but they both would be ruthless in their own way, you know, like Mikey would be on board with what Liam wants to do and vice versa. And you can see that. Now, again, they're great friends. I know the guys very well. As I said, they're great fun, the two guys, but also they're very driven. You know, I know that Liam at the start of the year, Mikey sat down, obviously, and they want to put their own stamp on things. And I think when you're coming in from as an outside manager into a new setup, you probably have to do that because, you know, there might be a few people that weren't maybe happy seeing an outside manager coming in. And I have to credit the guys who appointed them because they must have done their homework. Not only have the guys won that, but to know that the guys' personalities, you have to take a chance on, you know, and you're not going to get two better guys than Liam and Mikey. And, you know, when Liam Sheedy actually was putting himself open for the job again in Tipperary, you know, the guys probably felt that they were in with a shot. But at the same time, when Liam came back, you know, it was going to be very hard for the county board to look past Liam. And that's proved correct. But I think that Mikey and Liam, when they do come back into Tipperary, the guys they were over, the under-20s and 21s, they're going to be 24, 25 when the guys come back. All going well, they come back, hopefully. But I think that'll be perfect timing for them to come back in and put their own stamp again on a Tipperary set of all going well, but we won't look past the Waterford career yet. They have a few years left down there.
The feeling seems to be that if Limerick turn up and get anywhere near their best, they should win this game, that they are potentially one of the great teams that we've seen in recent times. And they had more than enough for Waterford in the Munster final. But Waterford's progression in the couple of games against Clare and Kilkenny, is it a very different Waterford side in terms of confidence that's going into this final compared to the Munster final?
Yeah, definitely. I think the Munster final especially, to come out of there and get the, I suppose it is a pat on the back you're getting because you're not winning, and that's not what the Waterford guys will be used to either. I know the last few years have been tough, but they've won a lot coming up in minor in 21 as well. So I think confidence was a huge thing for them. You know, I think they were probably overly criticised. Derek McGrath's regime, I don't think, deserved the criticism it did. I think especially when Derek finished up, a lot of injuries he got with the players finishing up, and it was a shame really. But I think that now that they needed that confidence builder, and I think that the guys coming in with that winning mentality from the setups they were in, they were very confident in what they wanted to impose. I think the players have bought into it. As I said, when Liam was asked on the Sunday game last week a question about Mikey Beavens, he just said the relationship that Mikey has with these players is amazing, and it's great to watch. And I think that shows. So that confidence is building, and the boys are instilling confidence, and it'll only get better. You know, when you see the likes of Callum Lyons catching the ball over TJ Reid, who's probably, in my opinion, the greatest player to ever play the game, you know that young man is going to go on and be player of the year, I would imagine, in a number of years, and he can play any position. So I think that Waterford team are just brimming with confidence at the moment, and they won't fear going into the weekend. They'll definitely back themselves. I do think Limerick, I know everyone's saying they have another gear, and it's hard to get that gear if it's not there all year, but you know, they're seasoned as well, you know. I do think the Limerick have it might be their best performance on Sunday, but I still think they might creep over the line.
John, could I ask you about the difficulties in backing up an All-Ireland win? So you obviously won in 2001 and it's 2010 before you get your hands on Liam McCarthy again. For a team like Limerick, when we're already talking about the possibility that with the type of players that they have, they could become a dominant force in hurling, will that weigh on them this weekend? You know, do we have to back up 2018? Did you find that over the years of Tipperary that you were always chasing that backup All-Ireland?
Well, personally, no, because when I arrived on the panel in 2001, it was my first year and we won the All-Ireland. So I expected it probably too easy for the next few years. And it was 0-8 before we won a Munster title and 10 before we won one again. So I was just very happy to get back there and win it in 10. But when we were there in 11, I suppose a big thing for us maybe in 11 was when Liam and the guys stepped away. Now, perfectly reasonable reason to step away. But I suppose in my career, I had 7 Tipperary managers. You know, you Tommy on earlier, Tommy has won. Most of the Kilkenny players have only had one. I think it makes a huge difference. You know, a new manager comes in and he wants to put his own stamp on it. He wants to get to know players. He doesn't know the personalities of each player as well, whereas, you know, the likes of Brian Cody would know each player inside out. How if they came into training with their head down, he'd know they're in bad form, he'd know this and that. He'd know how to manage them. So I think having a manager in place helps for longer periods. Limerick, I think if you go back to when they won the All-Ireland, in my own mind, I think they weren't ready. They won the All-Ireland, which is unbelievable. But I think everyone would have said they were maybe 2 years away from being All-Ireland champions. I think Seamus Hickey actually mentioned that after he retired, that they didn't expect to go on and win the All-Ireland that year. They were building and getting ready for it. I think they probably surprised themselves. But I think they're actually going to be peaking this year, next year, and the year after. So I do think there's a lot more in this Limerick team over the next few years. But as regards backing up, you could see the reaction after the last game. I do think that Galway game, they really, really wanted to get back there after last year against Kilkenny. So might have been a bit of complacency last year against Kilkenny, even though Kilkenny are a great team and they deserved it on the day. I think that this Limerick team still have a bit more there. I know everyone's saying that, and we could be proven right or wrong on Sunday, but I think to win the All-Ireland again, I think they'll really want to do that.
So one word then, John, who's going to win it?
Because of the connections I have with Mikey and Liam, obviously, I'd like to see the guys doing it. But I think Limerick just by a point or two, I think.
All right, great stuff, John. And the whiskey, Jim Mac Whiskey, you can check out jimmacwhiskey.com or get on to the Celtic Whiskey Shop. Best of luck with it all, John. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Cheers, Tommy. Cheers, Nathan. Bye.
Don't miss a second of the action. Subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast to get it every weekday morning in your podcast feed from 10 a.m.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, your most supported Our Frontline Workers this Movember. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.